This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers. Happy New Year. It's a new year. It's a new decade. It's some old Bugles. Happy New Year and welcome to the best of the first 99 Bugles, a historic moment in human culture. We've gone through all the recommendations you've sent by email, by blog, by carrier pigeon, carrier partridge, carrier eagle, any form of carrier bird or animal that's arrived at Times HQ, and picked out the very best, the cream of the cream of the cream of the Bugle so far. And given that the Bugle is already all cream, that's some pretty creamy stuff going down. Here it is.
The first highlight here is the first time the Bugle assisted in bringing a life into the world. Well, one half of the Bugle, that half, luckily under the circumstances, being Andy. Andy delivering his own son unto the world. The boy, the heir. Andy, yeah. Obviously we know we usually start the Bugle off with a little story about what we've been up to.
Yeah.
I yield the floor to you at the beginning this week, Andy. Any interesting stories?
Well, for once, John, I have a more exciting story than you, John, because this week, on Monday, my wife and I gave birth to a baby boy in the bathroom with me as the midwife. And I know what you're thinking, John.
Unbelievable.
You're thinking, Andy, you're not a qualified midwife. And
that's my initial thought there.
Well, what I would say to you, John, it's not a skill you can learn. You've either got it or you haven't. And no amount of qualifications, certificates and surgical gloves can prove otherwise. So I am now a midwife.
You delivered your own son.
My son on the bathroom floor. And it was, you know, it was fairly dramatic. My wife was in labour, giving it the usual, this seriously hurts in a genuinely primeval way. Oh, almighty Lord, why do you hate women so much? Yowks. You know, it was just a standard...
Yowks.
That's what women say in labour, John. It's the standard birth time procedure. So I was thinking, yes, love, could you keep it down? You're drowning out the cricket commentary and it's a key stage of an excellent test match. Come on, England. But this happy equilibrium of the sexes was disrupted, John, when my wife took some time out from mooing to say the words, it's coming out. Not... Andy, we're in established labour now, so I think it's time to go to the hospital and have this deal sealed by trained professionals. Come on, let's roll. She said, it's coming out. At this point, I got a little petrified. I shouted down to my sister, who was looking after Matilda downstairs, to call an ambulance. And I was thinking to myself, well, labour takes ages. We're probably making a fuss about nothing. At which point, my wife says, I can feel its head. And at this stage, I start thinking, we're going to have to drive really fast to get to the hospital in time.
You're still very much not taking responsibility for the situation
really
at this point.
Trying to, you know, look for the positives.
You're thinking, I pay my taxes, I'd love to get something back for those taxes.
That's right.
How about using the facilities I pay for?
That's right. I was thinking, you know, how busy Norwood High Street is like to be at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning. When, and this kind of little reverie was rudely interrupted, when I see its f***ing head coming out...
Oh, my
so,
God.
I can see the top of my still about 98% unborn child's bonce. Mm. And now I start to think to myself, I am completely out of my depth. I'm about as out of my depth as possible to be without being an orangutan in a submarine. But luckily, the woman on the other end of the 999 call kept things very simple. And basically, John, if you're ever in this situation, the basic advice if you're delivering your own child is don't drop it. just hold its head. Don't let it come out too fast, and don't drop it. I say, try and sit down. She says, ah! There's a few more squeals of fundamental agony, and then all of a sudden it's squelch baby. And coincidentally, Pop Squelch Baby was the title of an old 1960s TV programme. So nature and gravity combined, and I caught my child falling out of my wife. Soft hands, nice clean take. Got him. It's a boy. He seemed to be in good working order with all the classic signs of a human baby. His nadgers were all in the right place. Well, both in the right place. Yeah. I thought, we've done it. We were kind of overwhelmed by this rush of the purest, most intense ecstasy you can imagine. John, it was definitely the highlight of my week. No doubt about it. And bear in mind, I watched the mighty Harlequins win a crucial European Rugby Cup match at, with a last-second drop goal on Saturday after one of the most dramatic and exciting conclusions to a game in rugby's history. But, and also that one didn't make quite such a mess in my bathroom floor. But still, I put delivering my own child just above that.
It's one of those things that you just assume doesn't happen anymore, people having to emergency deliver their own children, especially if you live in a major city. And, you know, really, relatively speaking, quite close to a hospital. I don't know quite how you managed to have to do that emergency procedure.
It was a short labour, John. And last time we went to hospital and got sent home for going in not in labour enough.
Yeah, OK, so we'll split the difference next time.
We did overcompensate.
God, I forgot all about that.
The next story is the greatest act of protest ever delivered in human history. One boy, one penis, outline, one roof.
What amazing things you could do with a can of paint.
Penises on roofs. You see, Andy, the Bugle is already changing. It's in LA and it's already become attention-grabbingly commercial. We are dumbing down. It's happening. Damn this city of fallen angels. It's true. This story is indeed about penises on roofs. An 18-year-old in Britain secretly painted a 60-foot drawing of a phallus on the roof of his parents' £1 million mansion in Berkshire. It was there for around a year before his parents found out. And they've said that they're going to make him clean it off when he gets back from travelling. What a story, Andy. A fortnight ago, it was monkeys who stepped forward to take the Bugle's coveted top story slot and provide much light relief to a world frozen in economic fear. This week, step forward, rooftop penises. What a story!
Well, this is unquestionably the new story of the decade, I would say. I mean, there's a global recession. You can take that. You can take your funky new president in America. Your looming environmental mega-catastrophes, your ongoing wars, the gradual devastation of everything we as a species hold dear. And even that meteorite that's going to destroy the planet Earth next Wednesday. That's a bit of a Bugle scoop, that one. But there's only one story in town in the first decade of the third millennium, and that is this boy painting a massive wang on the roof of his parents' mansion. Everything else seems irrelevant now, John. A boy's painted a gigantic Johnson on a big house. And I think what this goes to show is that when times are at their toughest, John, and when the present is bleak and the future is even bleaker, humankind will go back to basics, back to its roots, and commune with its primeval, prehistoric self and draw a massive cock on something. It's happened since the dawn of time, John. Look at the Cerne Abbas giants down in the West Country in England. Started off when a teenage caveman chiselled a giant willy and balls onto his parents' hill. His dad was so embarrassed that he drew a giant man around it and pretended it was religious. When God was drawing up the blueprint for the human being, John, you know, he'd created something simple, elegant, without too many vulnerable external protuberances. All of a sudden he gets a bit bored, draws a cock and balls on it, giggles, goes to bed, oversleeps and wakes to find out that his over-efficient secretary has already sent the drawing off to be made up into a living being. That's where the problems began.
What? I'm 31 years old. Why do I find this story so funny? We'll put the photo of this up on the website, and I heartily encourage you to go and take a look at it, because it truly is a work of art. Michelangelo had the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel and the heavens. This kid had a roof and a massive penis. They're basically the same. But for me, this story brings up a number of key questions, Andy.
Right, yeah.
Like, one, what does this do to the house price? Because if they find that it's actually added value, then perhaps people will have to draw massive penises on their roofs to compete. These are tough times, Andy. It's a buyer's market. People used to have the smell of freshly baked bread and coffee to shift a house. Now, it's all about the painted roof penis.
I think, you know, there's another question, John. What on earth...
What is that question?
What on earth possessed a teenage boy to paint a massive slung on his parents' roof? And I guess the obvious answer to that is that he's a teenage boy and his parents have a roof. And, you know, nature decreed he was going to draw a penis somewhere.
OK, I have another question in retort to that, Andy. Okay. I'll point out that simply that they had it for an entire year without noticing, which really makes you think, can anyone truly say they are 100% sure that they don't have a massive penis on their roof right now? When was the last time you were up on your roof? A penis could be there right now. How does the lesson go? Laugh not at the penis on your neighbour's roof until you're sure that you don't have an even bigger penis on yours. It's like one of Aesop's more obscene fables. The ones he wrote when he was drunk late at night. How about you, Andy? Can you be absolutely sure you don't have a penis on your roof?
I can't be absolutely sure, John, but
exactly.
I can verify that no penis-shaped aircraft have landed on my roof by mistake, okay. Thinking that was a penis craft pad. But I guess, you know, there's another way of looking at this, John.
Yeah.
As a tangential way of answering your question about whether I've got a penis on my roof. And that is that this, it could be a fertility symbol. You know, maybe this lad just wanted to have a little younger brother or sister to play with.
Right.
He was trying to summon the assistance of some primeval divinity to bring fruit to his mother's womb. Who knows? All I do know, John, is that when my wife and I were trying to get pregnant for the first time, we painted a dangler and two nuggets on our roof. But unfortunately, at the time, we were living in a downstairs flat, so we had some very angry neighbours from the upstairs flat asking us to replace their living room carpet with something a little bit less obscene.
Also, the parents here claim that this is their son's doing, but you know, let's be fair, he's not there to defend himself from this charge.
Yeah.
They could be stitching him up. Let's play Columbo for a second here, because this case may be trickier than it initially appears. Could it be they are framing their own son to protect themselves from the truth, that they painted a massive penis on their own roof and were hoping no one would notice? It's the perfect crime. Or was this a more supernatural occurrence? Aliens have been said to regularly swoop down in the middle of the night and create mysterious crop circles. Perhaps they're branching out. They finished their crop circle phase and now experimenting with roofs and penises.
Well, I've got another explanation for this, John, and I think the boy is guilty of this charge of painting a massive penis on his parents' roof. But I think what it is, John, is it's the it's actually the pitch markings from the old English sport of the roof game, which is an early form of football which originated on the roof of Eton College Chapel in the 16th century.
Yeah.
Now, the story goes that an infestation of dry rot resulted in the discoloration of the roofing timbers on the chapel in the shape of the aforementioned anatomia. And during a decade of flooding, the school was forced to move the entire school operation onto the chapel roof. Now, they started playing the roof game using this kind of pitch marking that nature had created on their roof. And now in the roof game, one team defends the nadge end, named after the two semicircular shapes at one end, which look like an ecclesiastical nadge, which is a two-headed scepter used by school chaplains in medieval times.
Yep. Is it? Right.
This team was known as the Nadgers. Now, the other team defended the end nearest the chapel's main bell, or the bell end, where the dry rot fungi had grown bountifully around the outline of a spare bell that had been left on the roof after the school campanology society meeting, had degenerated into an alcoholic sea of fumbling homosexualism. As is traditional at schools such as Eton. So that led to a bell left unattended on the roof on a stormy night. This team, of course, was known as the Bell Ends. Now, the attacking side had to use the slope of the roof to curl the ball, which is originally made from the stomach of the school's least popular boy, to curl that around the defenders up the long, narrow centre of the pitch. This process was known as chaffing, as the boys would roll up their school gowns, or chaffs, to use as slings to impart extra spin on the ball. Once a team had reached the end of the main central portion of the pitch, its players would shout the word shaft to signal that the chaffing phase of the attack was complete. On the call of shaft, the attacking team would attempt to score. For the bell ends, this involved scratching the nadgers, or tagging each member of the nadger defence with the ball whilst in the nadge zone.
Good God.
And for the nadgers, a score required them to yank them.
No.
Yank the bell ends. In other words, to wrestle the defenders out of the bell end area, leaving an attacking nadger with the ball in the unoccupied zone. Now, of course, neither side scored either a yank or a scratch between 1604 and 1856, making it very like the Eton Wall game, when a successful scratching of the nadgers attracted such nationwide press interest that Queen Victoria and Prince Albert were invited to pop down the road from Windsor Castle to watch a game. Whilst observing from above in the Royal Hot Air Balloon, the professional Queen and Mother of Eight were seen to succumb into fits of giggles, pointing at the outline of the pitch and chuckling to Albert, who himself then began to laugh. Queen Victoria was then seen to apparently grab Albert's nethercots with her royal hand, provoking yet more laughter as the loving couple disappeared from view into the balloon's basket. Albert reappeared briefly, just to sever the cord tethering the balloon to the ground, and the royal balloon floated off somewhat unsteadily, rocking vigorously from side to side to the sounds of lascivious growls from Prince Consort and ecstatic whoops from Her Majesty. 9 months later, Princess Beatrice was born, but the headmaster and provost of Eton were so disturbed at the moral and psychological devastation wreaked upon the schoolboys from seeing the monarch thraggling her husband that they instantly banned the roof game from ever happening again. Having viewed the roof from above and realising that it did in fact look quite like a gentleman's exhibits, they covered the old wooden roof with a giant tarpaulin which currently resides in the Guinness Book of Records as the world's largest posing pouch. And the roof game fell into obscurity until it was just recently heroically resuscitated by this brave young teenager from Berkshire. And of course the terms nadger, bellend and shaft remain in popular usage today.
You are a husband and father of two.
I love my history, John. Is that a crime?
It is shameful upon both of us, Andy, that this story has inspired us so much.
Interestingly, John, just last week, as we say this is in December now. This story happened in March, I believe, of this year.
Yeah.
That story made it back to the top of the BBC website's most read stories list. People clearly just keep thinking, it's a bit of a dull day today. I'm feeling a bit down. I need to cheer myself up. What in the world is the thing most guaranteed to make me see the good in humanity and the positive side of life? Oh, no, I'll look at that story about the boy painting a massive cock on his parents' roof.
Exactly.
Life is good again. That was nominated by several Buglers, including Claire Pritchard and Lawrence Hassan. So thanks very much.
Tom, you have a best of Bugle. What is that?
Well, I'm not going to be an egotist and say someone on the blog who's called themselves definitely not Tom the Scottish producer. I nominate all of the clips where Tom talks.
Oh.
Come on!
But certainly enough of an egotist to mention that, Tom. Mention that email to highlight it.
Well, I have to admit it was me.
All right, Braveheart. Freedom!
Freedom! Hey, Tommy! Hey!
What I'm saying is I've got fans, OK? All two of them. What I'm going to say is Stacey Bond put it very succinctly. She said, this is taking me a lot of time. It's like choosing my favourite child if I did have children.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this all weekend. It even distracted me a bit during Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But two words, volcano porn.
A wise choice, madam.
Strap yourselves
wise in. Choice.
Hotties from history now, and thanks for your continued contributions to this global phenomenon that has truly redefined the nature of human existence. This suggestion comes from a man known only as Volcano Man.
Good name.
Good name. I don't know if it's his real name.
Oh, well, I hope it is.
An assumed name.
It could be his Christian name.
It could be his Christian name. So, dear John and Andy, writes Volcano Man, for your consideration, the ultimate hottie from history. Oh, those sensual flanks, those delectable shoulders, and the warm, yielding mouth filled with the hints of Eastern promise. And lava. Lots and lots of lava. Like the goddess Pele, he continues. In fact, I think you will find that Pele was, in fact, a footballer for Brazil from 1958 to 1970, rather than a goddess. But anyway, we'll let that one pass. Like the goddess Pele, who would almost certainly win the hottie from mythology competition. With the energy of thousands of atomic bombs and an age of over 74,000 years, the Toba eruption of Sumatra is a true hottie from history. Well, John, I think that is the first seismic event that we've had nominated as a hottie from history.
But it's a good nomination, I think. It really makes the earth move.
Certainly does. Volcano Man continues, after years of lying quietly, passive and gentle, this Asian wonder cast off her calm demeanour and revealed the hot, boiling cauldron of passion buried within. She literally rocked primeval man's world. Across all of Asia and India, men were smothered by her fine ash. All of the world swooned under the effects of her vapours. Even now, the awesome hotness of this ultimate hottie from history lives on as volcanologists, what a great word that is, from all over the world, use any excuse they can to delve into her flooded cauldron in search of the first fresh warmth of her renewed passion.
I think what he's done, Andy, is he's just invented volcano porn. That could be the new boom industry.
With the emphasis very much on the boom. Anyway, Volcano Man concludes. Queen once said that, quotes, fat bottom girls make the rocking world go round. I think you'll find actually that was the Queen who said that.
That's right. She was later quoted by Freddie Mercury, but that was the Queen who said that.
Yeah, is that her coronation?
That's right, because as we know, this Queen's got back, Andy. She's got back. She's got back. I'm not ashamed to say that. This Queen Elizabeth has got back. She's got a big butt. I cannot lie.
Her Majesty
all,
got
all
back.
All the other royals can't deny. When Her Majesty walks in with an itty-bitty waist and a round thing in my face, I get sprung.
Do you, John?
I do. It's a compliment, Andy. My anaconda don't want none. Unless my mona's got buns, hon. She can do side bends or sit-ups, but don't lose that healthy butt. Sir Mix-a-Lot, that's an official title.
Well, now Lord Mix-a-Lot, of course, after his father sadly passed away. Back to the email. The Queen once said that fat bottom girls make the rocking world go round, and until Western obesity reaches its dangerous and self-destructive peak, the 100-kilometre-wide booty of Toba is truly without earthly competition. Yours, with greatest respect, Volcano Man, in need of a cold shower.
What an email! That is outstanding, Volcano Man.
Who would have thought in this day and age of the internet that any new form of pornography could be invented? But,
that's right.
Volcano Man, you have invented it. Well done.
And you heard it on the Bugle first.
That's all very well, all that stuff. But the Bugle's about one thing. It's about really awful puns. And a number of you have been begging to hear some of them again. So here are some of the greatest puns and contrived wordplays in Bugle history. And let's just take a guess who's done more of them, out of me or John.
Oh, yeah. Take a wild swing at that.
Yeah. You don't have that club in your bag, mate. But how do you think the Bugle would report this story if it were a tabloid only interested in headlines containing wordplays?
Uh-oh.
Well, I think what we'd have to say in that situation would be...
Let me just buckle up first, okay. Andy.
John, is this situation careering out of control? If so, how Kim? The issue is getting complicated. It's like a jongil. It's getting Pyong the Pale. Oh, yang it all. The situation is Chonjin all the time. Chonjin is a city in northeast North Korea. Hey, Kim, if you're listening, I do wish you'd grow up. Haiju, also a North Korean city. You loser! The Yalu River is on the border between North Korea and China. I tell you, I'm not happy about this. Amnok is the Korean name for the Yalu River. And you are to blame. Anju is another city. You've been very Silla. Silla, an ancient Korean kingdom. Now, just you Hangul a minute. Give me one good reason we should let you get away with this. Hangul is the Korean alphabet. The won is the North Korean currency. Come here and say that. Self-explanatory. Actually, don't. I wouldn't want to be Sinuiju in public. Sinuiju, that's another North Korean city. Oh, Kim On, you're being a total cult. You better sling it and fast. Horyong now. Horyong, that's another city. This Stop. Friendship... this friendship, Daidong the Vine. Stop Daidong, it. That's a river. Okay, now bike do you in America, John. Bike do, that's a big North Korean mountain.
Oh,
what do you reckon?
God.
Sejong, it wasn't that difficult. Sejong, that was a 15th century Korean
king. No.
So I'll leave it to you now. Gojong. Gojong, of course, the first emperor of the Korean Empire. 22 North Korea-based puns, John.
What record are you trying to break there?
Most North Korean-based puns.
Not number of suicides during a joke. Either way, you're going to get on the podium. Well, congratulations, Andy.
Thanks, mate.
Could hear the pride in your voice as they were spewing out like a bullshit waterfall.
Music news now, and fans of Grammy Award-winning music legend John Cougar Mellencamp were left fuming when they turned up to what they thought was going to be a concert of rootsy rock classics, only to be whisked off in a bus for 2 weeks camping with celebrity host former Welsh international rugby legend Barry John, in which they hunted mountain lions and ate nothing but fleshy, if fairly tasteless and often disappointing fruit. 63-year-old rock fan Travis Lemond angrily commented afterwards, "If I'd known it was going to be that kind of John Cougar Mellencamp, I'd never have paid £950 for my ticket."
Oh, my God.
As always, some sections of the Bugle going straight to the bin. This week, part one in the serialisation of the hit audiobook Can Ducks Duck? And 50 other meaningless wordplay-based questions about animals, including, why aren't foxes foxy? Do hippos have hips? Is my rhino a wino? What are the correct legal channels for making an allegation against an alligator? Is it rude to flip a bird to a bird? What do I do if there's an impala in my parlour? What do I do if my stick insect gets stuck in a sect? Would my Mallard Fillmore if I dressed it up like 1850s US President Millard Fillmore? Will excessive reading of Don Quixote make my donkey OD?
Oh, no. Strike two. Strike two, Andy.
Will an ant elope with my antelope?
Strike three!
Do woodcocks have wooden cocks? How big is a mamba's member? How come great tits don't have great tits? Do blow flies? Is my hornet horny? Do ocelots toss lots? And is my horse pimping whores? I'm done.
Ouch, Andy. And that physically hurts, reliving that.
You can't handle the truth.
Your emails throughout the 99 Bugles have been magnificent. They've been lovely to read, often very supportive, but perhaps one stood out. And that's not just because it was a great email to the Bugle, it's because, as I think we all collectively decided, it was the single greatest email ever written. It was a long time ago, but it seems like only yesterday. Let's dip our toe once more into the ocean of bile that was the greatest email ever told.
And possibly the most spectacular email ever sent to the Bugle.
from a man whose name we can't quite decipher. It could be Will, or it could be Indy, or it could be Will in Indy. He writes this, addressed to John and myself, as Oily and Schmaltz. Which I think, you know, if we ever hit the Jewish circuit, John, that could be quite a good double act name.
That sounds like a great 1920s double act. Hey, Oily, watch that, Schmaltz.
This gentleman writes, just what do you think you are doing? Are you humorists, or is attempted humorical behaviour, question mark, first law of clowns, embody fundamental truths in your satire, embittered deconstructive bile as spoon-fed by failing socialist scruds. It reads like it might be an entire audio cryptic crossword. Do you know what a scrud is?
It sounds like an insult.
At NYT and its UK clones.
That's New York Times.
It's only momentarily amusing, though, apparently.
All right.
And that only in brief spots when truth is accidentally encountered. Could be a horoscope. Then shame and embarrassment set in. Wow, what a disappointment, he continues. I heard your webcast, number 22, and thought it had promise. But on reviewing past episodes, I see you are cranky, muddled, hater satire business as usual.
What?
Your USA audience, the ever-shrinking NYT crowd, and nearly extinct Radio America snarks, maybe enough to keep you in beverages at the local NYC political circle jerks. No, I don't live in New York, John. Is there something you've not been telling me about what you get up to on a Thursday night?
Well, yeah, just general circle jerking. What do you do on a Thursday?
But what about returning home to the UK? He continues. Do they have satire under Sharia law?
What? No, they don't. That's the answer implicit in the question there.
Let me get this straight. You actually have some kind of potty prince or dismal duke or something who cross-dresses as an Bedouin kaftan flapper?
What?
I don't believe anybody could understand that sentence. Is that where jihadists keep their satire? Under their skirts? What's the latest beheading joke out of East End?
It's like a Lewis Carroll nonsense poem.
I do find humour in the behaviour of typical Eurocretins who, after wrecking their own nations and participating in mass cultural suicide, suddenly emigrate to USA for shelter, but seem to want to continue the spread of their mentally debilitating disease.
Is that me?
Yeah. I think that's you, John. I think that's you.
Okay.
That is a heckle.
One hell of a heckle.
I suppose if you ask a cretin, he don't know he are one. Oh. And he concludes, wouldn't you rather grow up to be real philosopher comedians rather than remain bum-dwelling trouser fleas? The socialist hate cheese is rich in protein, but lacks essential brain-building vitamins.
Andy, I don't think we're accepting this email in the spirit it was intended.
That kind of leftist mental death is a sorry road. Next, you'll be arrested looting shops or scrawling graffiti on train sheds during imagined Bilderberg conferences.
No, I won't.
Now stop it and be good boys. Try funny. From Will Indy.
Oh, Will. Tell you what, Andy, it says something about the general standard of emails we get to the Bugle, that even the hate mail is entertaining. I doubt he is, because he's clearly angry. Well, if you are listening to this, please send another email.
I think it might be a coded distress signal. Maybe he's been kidnapped.
To be honest, that email has rendered all others redundant.
Yeah. It's like the monkeys following Jimi Hendrix.
A lot of people have asked for the story of the terrorist arse bomber. This was also a favourite story of mine, Andy, a real favourite, partly because it was the funniest piece of terrorism in a decade which didn't feature many funny pieces of terrorism, more horrifying to annoying. It was a real bright spot in the world of international dickbags. Terrorism development news now, and brace yourselves, just brace yourselves for this story. A suicide bomber recently put himself next to a member of the Saudi royal family, having outwitted bomb detection machines in the palace to set off an explosion using explosives and a detonator that had been hidden in his rectum. You did not just mishear what I said there. This is panicked security experts who say that standard screening procedures may need much more intrusive types of X-ray machines now that can actually see inside body cavities. But really, this makes me think only one thing. These people are never actually going to come to their senses. Because if you don't realise what you're doing is insane, as you are preparing to have explosives, a charger and a detonator forcibly pushed up your anus, then I think you are probably too far gone. Because they must be standing in a small windowless room, gripping a table, saying, I hate the West, I hate the West. Not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet. Let me get ready. I hate the West, I hate the West, I hate the West. Yes, I do. OK, go now. Oh, I hate the West. I hate them so much. Slowly, please, take it easy back there. I hate the West. Oh, although, you know, to be honest, the West has given us a lot when you stop to think about it. No one loves pizza more than me. Maybe they're not all bad. Ow! Ow! I've never cared enough about any single thing in my life to do that.
It isn't clear from the reports I've read whether this guy, Abdullah Asiri, who, as you say, whacked a pound of explosives and a detonator up his jacksy. I don't know if he called this play himself or was coerced into it by his line manager at Al-Qaeda. It must have been. It's what Allah would want you to do, really. Could I not just eat it and wait a few hours?
It is concrete proof, if proof were needed, that terrorists are idiots.
But what if he'd had last-minute doubts, John? I mean, would the security guards who failed to pick him up have picked up on a nervous-looking youth frantically wolfing down six packets of dried apricots and shuffling off to the gents with a cryptic crossword tucked under his arm?
So, right, this might be a tricky one and I'm going to have to flush fast.
It's not often suicide bombing can qualify as a good news story. A little humorous. And finally, at the end of the news, luckily, he succeeded only in blowing up his own arse and, as collateral damage, himself. And no doubt the Saudi prince he was aiming for turned to what was left of him and said, bloody hell, what did you have for dinner last night? Still better out than in, eh? No, you pull my finger.
Oh, no. I'm an adult male. I'm 32.
Well, I guess when you hear a story like this, you do start to sincerely hope that there is an afterlife.
Oh, yeah.
You can picture the angry-looking Allah with his clipboard saying, so, Abdullah Asiri, butt bomber. Now, how was it you died again? Oh, yeah, shoving explosives up your arse and blowing your guts to pieces. Right. Well, just remind me, can you just pinpoint exactly where, in one of my many religious tracts, exactly where I said, blessed will be they who shove bombs up their arses. For he who painfully suppositorises lethal quantities of explosive right out where the sun don't shine clearly understands my message of divine peace and love. Abdullah Asiri, you are a fail. Stamp. Take the down escalator, kid. You've earned it. I do hope that he becomes a role model and inspiration for all terrorists.
Absolutely. Please follow him if you have to follow anyone, which you don't. And finally, Andy, I'll introduce this. It's your Sistine Chapel. It's the beautiful tale which has echoed through my mind ever since and will echo for generations to come. The story of Michelangelo by Andrew Zaltzman.
Bugle feature section now. And 500 years ago this year, Michelangelo, or as he was known by his friends, Mickey Paintbrush, was commissioned to do a little bit of decorating for the Pope. He got his nickname, of course, not because of his artistic skills, but because he had tough, bristly, straight hair, which, when he was drunk, he would dip in a vat of paint and headbutt cartoon testicles into the sides of churches. Anyway, the story goes that Julius II asked Mickey Paintbrush, "Can you whack a lick of paint on the ceiling in my chapel? It could do with a bit of sprucing up." "Sure, Papa J," replied Michelangelo. "What do you want? How about a bit of a fresco?" "Sure, why not?" replied the pontiff. "Great," yipped the young artist. "I was thinking of doing something with some dogs playing snooker." Right, Mickey P," said the Pope awkwardly. "It's just, I was just kind of hoping for something a little bit more kind of neutral. Maybe just, you know, just a plain off-white magnolia colour. You know, Mick, something that isn't going to go out of date." "Righto, Skipper," replied Michelangelo, a little downcast. "Hey, do you mind if I do a couple of little bits from the Bible in the corner?" "No, all right," conceded the Pope, "but just nothing too flash, little Mickey." "Yay!" yelped the 33-year-old five-time winner of the Golden Chisel Award for Terrific Sculpture. "I'll go and get my special scaffold." 4 years later, an angry Pope banged on the door of the Sistine Chapel with his big staff. "Have you finished yet, Paintbrush?" he shouted. "Yep, all done, big man." The pontiff stormed in, hat akimbo. "What the f*** have you done to my ceiling, you flash?" "Sorry, Pop," said the artist. "I just got a bit carried away." "Oh, balls," winced the Vatican vicar. "Bloody hell, Mickey, what is your obsession with naked cocks?" "Shit, I've got a christening to do in 20 minutes. This is going to have to do." "Okay, boss. Sorry, boss," mumbled the 4-in-1 painter, sculptor, architect and chicken impersonator. "You haven't heard the last of this, Buonarotti," blasted the Catholic kahuna. "Give me that paintbrush. That's confiscated." Pope Julius turned to go to his dressing room. Just then, something on the ceiling caught his eye. "Hang on, that looks like... No, it can't be. Is that my wang? Mickey Paintbrush, have you painted my papal prong on that nudie man? Come here! Come here, you little... Oh, no, he's got away. I knew I should have got Da Vinci to do this. Knew it." So, to commemorate half a millennium, since this historic moment in the history of history.
Brings a tear to the eye, even now.
It's a spectacular piece of writing, Andy, partly because you think of all the things you could have been doing in the time that you wrote that.
Like writing a blog.
That's right. That's right, Tom.
I'm Jewish.
What has that got to do with anything?
Well, it's just, you know, that one time of the week that I have for blog writing is...
taken up by Quick Info?
Sundown on Friday and sundown on Saturday. I'm not allowed to.
Inspirational, Andy.
You can't blog. You read Exodus. Don't blog on a Sabbath.
It's a masterpiece if you make the term so broad as to become totally meaningless.
It's about a masterpiece.
That's right.
So thanks for those who suggested that. That was including people known only as Cole and Rosser and several others. It's good to know that Mickey Paintbrush lives on. So that's it. Thanks for all your recommendations via email and on the comments section of the... what's the word again?
Blog.
Blog. So that's it. That's the best of the Bugle, as chosen by you and us. That's democracy. Democracy at work. And that's what the Bugle is partially about.
Thanks very much for listening, Buglers. We'll be creating more memories, some bad, some good.
Mostly
over
bad.
The next year. Mostly bad. Let's, you know...
Next week.
Call an apple.
Next week. The musical, there's a lot of bad memories.
The musical spectacular.
It's just you bursting into song, John.
Song fragments to me are what unforgivable puns are to you. Addictive.
The Bugle musical special will be available this time next week, whenever you're listening to this one. Bye-bye, Buglers.
Bye!
For the best in sport, comedy, science and books, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.